Terry Height, please come forward. Apparently, Terry Height graduated from this program, which he had to remind me, I don't remember the years, in 1994. Yes, and if you turn over that your main outline in the front, you'll see a little bio about Terry. He's a brother in Christ. He's a well-trained psychologist and a great friend, and he's about to take over my computer. Thanks for coming,
indeed,
Terry.
Yeah. Indeed, I'm honored.
Yeah. Mike will set him up and... while we're at it, let's take a look at the bio. Graduated from this program in 94. Attended Virginia Commonwealth, where he received his PhD. And Terry, I always tell folks when he comes and talks to my classes that he's one of the most impressively tenacious persons on some issues that I know. He decided, I want to go to Virginia Commonwealth. I want to study with Everett Worthington. And he's a premier Christian therapist researcher. And I like his work. And if you know about doctoral programs, setting your cap toward working in a particular program with a particular professor is it's a brave achievement. It's a brave...
Aspiration.
Thank you. Yeah, most people like me apply to 9 different programs, hoping that one will find me worthy. Well, Terry, anything else you want to say? How about
How do you want this one?
That one does work, but you can have this one.
Oh, I can be mobile.
You can be mobile.
This will take a few minutes for it to boot up. It really is an honor. To be here, in a lot of ways, it's coming home. And I smile as I think about that because I hold RTS in a very high regard, and I'm looking around and seeing various people, and my worlds are crashing. There's some of you I've set beside as students, and some of you I've set under as teacher, and some of you... I've had the privilege of working with, and others I just met in various capacities, and so it's an honor to be with you this morning. Can't do two things at once. When Bill basically said, "Hey, can you come and talk?" I immediately said, "Wow, I want to be able to clear my schedule to do this," not only because of my personal affection and respect for you, but just the esteem I have for the organization. And so what I said was, is I can't really give a how-to on the technical aspects of doing telehealth. I don't think that I am competent or qualified to do that. So you're not going to get a step-by-step, here are the things that one must do if you're going to move in doing remote telehealth, e-health, telepsychiatry. I've heard it called telemental. There's a lot of names that get associated with that. You're not going to get a how-to. What you will get is some insight into the journey that the children's home has gone through as we have made the move into the world of telehealth. And it might give you some insight of to the things that you might consider. And I'll try to point you to some resources that might be available to you on the web as you consider making this pilgrimage into that. And the thought that I've got is technology has changed considerably. Yep. Okay. Okay. You can do that. One of the issues that we dealt with when we're dealing with telepsychiatry is the audio. Because you know, communication, go back to the communication 101, message sent must be message received. And so we did have some difficulty in trying to work through our audio issues. And it is not seeing. Let's see if we can do this. Hopefully you can see what we've got here. Well, it will definitely be a different presentation if this does not work. Okay, here's the thought. Technology has really transformed. And I said that I was going to give some insight in the journey that we have taken. Our journey really started about 7 years ago, and we're doing this amidst phenomenal technological change. And so to try to punctuate that, think about the things that are different than they were 7 years ago. How many of you have a Facebook page? Okay, how many of you have been on Facebook in the last 24 hours? Okay, how many of you have been on Facebook this morning? Okay, very good. How many about a Pinterest? Okay, very good. LinkedIn? Some LinkedIn, okay. What about Twitter? Any Twitters? Okay, send some tweets. Yeah. How many of you iPads? Okay, now hold them high, you Apple folks. Very good. The few, the proud. Okay, thinking about how things were 7 years ago when we were moving into using telehealth, Pinterest did not exist. It's become a commonplace thing today for those of you that are searching for the latest fashion and or something that you can create. Twitter, 7 years ago, was a type of a bird vocalization. And if you were to send a tweet, it had a different meaning. Blockbuster, 7 years ago, 9,000 stores, a $5 billion industry. Zero stores today because of technology. Facebook was 3 years old at the time. There were 100,000 business pages. Today it's valued at $300 billion. And it becomes a way of life. I think that it will change how we go about hiring. That pretty soon people will not apply to organizations. Organizations will go to the web to find employees who list themselves on places like Monster, Facebook, etc. iPad was just an imagination. Think about this. It wasn't launched until 2010 and how easily it works its way into our world. Lehman Brothers, fourth largest investment bank in the U.S., a year later filed for bankruptcy, one of the largest bankruptcies in the history of the financial world. If you were a Blu-ray or you wanted a Blu-ray, you went to the beach because it was a fish and it was a misspelled fish. And then what I want to put up here is, well, at PRTF, this is acronym ALERT. PRTF stands for Psychiatric Residential Treatment Facility. Okay, what that basically means is that when kids are going to acute care hospital, this is your Brentwoods Memorial, this is where they go for psychiatric medication management, typically 7 to 14 days. When they step down from that, they didn't have a place to go 7 years ago, other than a psychiatric residential treatment facility. Now, we operate one. I think that we operate the one that's best in the state and one of the best in the nation. But the choice for the parent at the time was to leave your kid in 24-hour care of strangers and walk away and let them get the help that they needed. And so what we said was, we being collectively the Division of Medicaid, Department of Mental Health, private providers, there has to be another way of providing that type of care. Now, parenthetically, before I go on, 7 years ago, you would not have had State and Ole Miss tied for number three in the nation. I don't know that we will see that again in the next 7 years. But here's what we did. Basically, in an attempt to respond to the need, Division of Medicaid, which was one of our funding entities, set forth and applied for a grant, $50 million. Mississippi was one of nine states that was awarded a grant. And we started something called Mississippi Youth Programs Around the Clock. It was designed to provide, get this, psychiatric residential treatment in the homes and the communities of the families so that you didn't have to send a kid to Jackson or to Mill Creek in Pontotoc or McGee or any number of the facilities. You could actually receive that care in the home. Now then, what made that very unique is it authorized in Mississippi the use of telepsychiatry that would be reimbursed by Medicaid. Up to that point, the Veterans Administration, the VA, was the only group that could provide that type of service. So it was the first move into the private world. The goal was to do 24-hour care in the community, to do that at no more cost than it was to send a child into the PRTF. We basically were one of two providers, we being Mississippi Children's Home. We were the only state provider. And like I mentioned before, telepsychiatry was integral to the work that we were doing. One of the things that we had to consider is creating a telehealth network. In other words, this is going to be a statewide program. At the time, we had four offices, Tupelo, Jackson, Hattiesburg, and Gulfport. Well, at that point, the goal for us was the family would not have to drive more than 50 miles in order to get to one of our locations, or our staff would not have to drive more than 50 miles to get to a home. So we set out, we're going to basically create a statewide network of 11 different offices. We're now 17 locations statewide. One of the things that we had to consider were administrative, what I consider policy concerns, has to do with licensure, has to do with sort of the legal side of what we're doing, clinical scope of practice. How do you do care in a way that's no more different than sitting eyeball to eyeball to someone in a physical location? How can you do that remotely? So in a way that maintains the integrity of that therapeutic relationship. And then some just technical considerations. I was over and still am over our IT department at MCHS, and so we were on the sort of the tip of the spear looking through some of those technical issues. Real quick, here's the things that I would have you consider, and here's the way that we landed on these particular issues. In terms of regulatory requirements, really the technology is the easy side of doing this. You've got Skype, you've got GoToMeeting, you have iPads, you have any number of ways in order to be able to reach out and make a connection. Technology, believe it or not, is easy. What's the hard part that keeps you from getting into a lawsuit or getting on the wrong side of a regulatory agency is knowing what the guidelines are. Believe it or not, the Food and Drug Administration regulates telehealth because you're using devices. This is a phone. It can do video conferencing. When you use it to do telehealth, it becomes a medical device. And so the blurring of the boundaries between what is my personal phone and what is my tool that I'm using to conduct a trade, the FDA regulates that. Now, what we chose is not to use these. We chose end-to-end, point-to-point telehealth. In other words, person in Jackson initiated a call, or someone outside of our physical location at one of our offices initiated a call to our Jackson. All of our psychiatrists are located here in Jackson. We currently have four. At the time we were starting, we were 1.5 board-certified child and adolescent psychiatrists. State law was one of the things that you have to consider. Okay, the way that it's set up now, typically you have to be licensed in the state that you are the provider, where the call is initiated, and the state where the care or the service is received. So if you go across state lines, I'm in Mississippi, I want to provide that in Tennessee, I have to be licensed in both states. We chose, because of that, only to be in Mississippi. All Mississippi licensed providers. Division of Medicaid has certain guidelines. They set forth the frequency, the timing, the dosage, and believe it or not, who can do that? At the point where we were going, still only psychiatrists could provide telehealth services. And so, regulatory. On the privacy concern, I would really have you think through this. HIPAA, everybody knows what HIPAA is, privacy, security. Think about when a client comes to your office, you have them sign a confidentiality, you have them sign consent, you have them do all that. Well, if they're not physically coming to your office to receive that service, how do you do that? And so we thought through, well, we're going to go to your home and have you sign that. And then when you need to come to our office, we've already got that set up for you. We chose to do that still by hand and not do that by consent, not to do that in an electronic means. There are others that do it differently. We chose a low-tech way to do that. Now, high-tech is when the Affordable Care Act came into play. High-tech regulates the use of telemedicine, basically all the privacy concerns of the electronic forms of communication, private health insurance, PHI. It regulates the breaches of that. In other words, now you're doing telehealth. What if you're on an unsecure network and that data gets out? Well, there's mandates of mandated reporting that goes on, and there's also, I think the first data breach is $50,000. one instance of it. If you were not culpable and you didn't willfully choose to do that, it goes up to close to $1 million when it gets willful, and it is a severe penalty. The Affordable Care Act basically ramped up the security side and those people who would be monitoring it, because the thought is that we can pay for a significant portion of the Affordable Care Act through waste, fraud, and abuse. And so there are regulators that oversee that. So it is not a neutral environment. Choose wisely in how you do that. So basically we set up a compliance committee. We got in touch with folks nationally who are doing this. What's the best that we can do in terms of setting up the protections and compliance? And then the standard operating procedures, we had to come up with policies and procedures, who could do what, how frequently, how they were going to document it. We also had to think through our general liability insurance, getting somebody to cover what at the time was an emerging practice, because you can still get sued, and you want to have liability coverage when that happens. So those were the general considerations that we have from administrative policy. I mentioned this before, licensure, both states. Ethical, mentioned that before, how we go through providing the consent, and then also how you're dealing with emergencies. If you have somebody who comes into your office and says, hey, well, I'm suicidal, or I'm thinking about hurting somebody, tear us off, it's easier to deal with when they're face-to-face with you. How do you do that when it's a remote site? How we chose to deal with that when we're doing telehealth is we have our staff in the physical location where that is happening. Psychiatrist in Jackson, staff in Gulfport, Macomb, Batesville, Olive Branch, so they can physically be there. It may be different if you're thinking about how to do this for yours. The biggest concern in this was quality of care. And I'll bottom line that for you. Kids love it. They think they're on TV. And basically, the technology moves into the background. And it basically recedes and is a way that you have a deep conversation around matters of import with a client, just as you would if you were face-to-face. Technological issues, bandwidth was a big problem. We had to, at the time, we had bought Tannenberg units point-to-point. It required a full IT staff to do that. It was what called a virtual private network or VPN connection, had to open up all kinds of ports. And if you think about the state of Mississippi, it's pretty rural. You still don't have high-speed internet connections to all places. So we had to actually, in some places, we went with T1 lines. In some places, we went with copper. We did what we could to get the pipeline to our locations so that the audio technical side of it would recede into the background. Have to do encryptions, 100% encrypted. That's the reason that we don't do Skype. Now, Skype at the time was kind of open. They've closed it now, and it's encrypted now. So if you choose to do that, then look at that closely. Basically, where Skype has entered into the fray, they're basically saying that they are not, they're a conduit. And the FDA has looked at that because there are certain business associate agreements that one has to get to comply with HIPAA and with high tech. And so the question at the time was, do you have to have an agreement with Skype in order to do telehealth? Are they a business associate? Are they doing something with that data? And so Skype basically went through their legal team and said, no, we're a conduit. We're not doing anything with that data. We are passing information much like the Postal Service. So when they got that designation, it opened it up, and Skype is now, some therapists use Skype to do that. We use GoToMeeting, and we're still point-to-point. We don't do end use with iPads or telephones, and I say that yet. Because where this is headed is now we're Jackson to an office. It will soon be Jackson and office to the home with respect to monitoring, checking in. I think that psychology and the way that we'll be doing to behavioral health on the cutting edge is it will move from I go to a therapist to I need to access therapist on demand. And so that, for us, that's where we are thinking about how we can do that in a way that maintains the integrity of what we are doing. So as I mentioned, we started 7 years ago with that. We're now all of these different locations. And Mississippi Youth Programs Around the Clock was a phenomenal success. Two states were successful in doing it. Mississippi, this is things that we can be proud of. We led the nation. We were actually selected by Georgetown University as a model program. They've come down on three different times to do videos with our kids, with our staff, and not only our staff, there are other providers that are doing that. Youth Villages is doing it. Pine Belt is doing it. And it will soon be opened up to all providers who are private mental health centers because it went from a waiver to now changes in the state plan and part of how successful it was. The white papers demonstrating success were presented to Congress as a best practice, and basically other states are using it as a model because Mississippi legislature changed the state plan for how you provide Medicaid services. And I'm saying Medicaid because the world that we live in predominantly, private providers are heading in this direction with the use of telehealth, because last year Governor Bryant passed legislation in which there's parity and which private insurances can reimburse and must reimburse and the definition at a real definitional level as what are the types of telehealth services that are provided.
Can you say parity for what types of providers you're talking about here?
Great question. Okay, parity in terms of the type of service. In other words, if it is a psychiatric service that Medicaid would cover or they'll pay for face-to-face with a psychiatrist, then the mode in which it is delivered cannot be an issue. So if I can do that with telehealth and I can still meet all the practice guidelines and I'm reimbursed for that, then the mode of it, provided I'm getting all the regulatory, can be reimbursable in that regard. Now, Mississippi still, it is a psychiatrist, psychologist, and there's some, I have to actually check on the LCSW. LPCs at this present time are not reimbursable from Medicaid in order to be able to provide this. They are when they're under the mandate of a waiver program or a provider that is approved. So we have therapists who are doing that under our umbrella, but the private provider is not set up. Okay.
Well, one of the things that I'm wondering about is if you're in a master's level marriage and family therapy program now, what's the probability that you, as a part of a team, would be in some way involved in telehealth within the next 5 or 7 years?
I think it's going to happen. The question was, if you are in an MFT program or you're considering going into a group practice, what is the probability or the likelihood that you will be using these type of services? Excuse me, don't know what's happening in my pocket there. There we go, how's that? Okay, what's the probability that you'll be using telehealth? I don't know if it will be apps. That's where I think that it is heading. I think that from a consumer perspective, and we're moving more to from a consumer, the demand, I think that it will make that shift. I don't know if it'll be 5 years, I don't know if it'll be 10 years, but I think that it will become a common part of what it is that we do. And I'm telling you, when I first heard this, I thought, these are the flakes, these are the kooks, these are the guys. Who's going to do therapy by email? Who's going to do this, I'll set up a time to meet with you? That is so impersonal. Well, at the time, it was. You had the lags. You had a lot going on. The technology is there. You are face-to-face with them. And so the regulatory side is catching up with the technology. The reimbursement is catching up with the technology, and it's moving. Mississippi is one of 7 states that got a grade A by the American Telehealth Association. And so we're poised to be able to do that. Now, in part, where I think that it is headed, more than likely, people will, rather than doing the solo practice, will be moving into groups, mental health centers. If you're going to be in that environment, then I think that you'll see it more and more. Where we went recently is we've started something called the Children's Collaborative, which is an agreement and a partnership with the University of Mississippi Medical Center. UMC has one of the largest telehealth networks around. That's one of the reasons the state got a grade A. There are 23 subspecialties. And so you think of this, so goes medicine, so goes other disciplines associated with it. Right now, they're doing emergency room, tele-emergency room throughout the state. You might be in a hospital in Goshen, Mississippi, or Louisville, or any number of places in the emergency room. The nurse that is monitoring you is in Jackson. That's happening. There's a few pediatric endocrinologists. If your child has diabetes, brittle diabetic, and you want to go see Dr. Maul at UMC, right now you leave your house, you drive to Jackson, and you wait the better part of hours, and you spend the entire day out of school to be able to see him. Where that is headed, they already right now pipe him as part of their specialty clinic out to remote hospitals. So hospitals are moving in this direction, and I think that you'll see private providers. Psychiatry is where that is headed, and I think that will ultimately be the link into other private providers. So basically, this was a $5 million project with UMC and the Division of Medicaid to do the integration of primary health and behavioral health. So just like you're going to a pediatrician, if a pediatrician needs to make a consult, they can do that to the case center at UMC. Now then, they can come to see a private mental health provider in one of our locations throughout the state. And so that's, I think, kind of exciting and where we're headed. Here's what I'd like for you to do. Sometimes it's different listening to me or others talk about it. A picture is worth a thousand words. I want you to hear from somebody who was in one of our programs called MyPack, if you can hear it. All right, I am with...
Who are you with?
I'm with Mississippi Children's Home Services, founded 102 years ago as a child-finding organization, primarily trying to create permanent loving homes, basically started in adoption. And so fast forward about 75 years, that's what we did, is therapeutic foster care. We did adoptions, putting a kid in need with a family who has a need, making things happen. Mid-late 80s, we really moved into the behavioral health world, and that's where we got more into the psychiatric side, and now that really the tail is wagging the dog. We're about 500 employees, we're 17 different locations, and we do a continuum of services deep in psychiatric care. Kid goes to Brentwood, steps out, they're in our domain, all the way through intensive outpatient, day treatment, outpatient, therapeutic foster care, still do adoption. We do diagnostic and emergency shelters, family preservation, family reunification, traditional outpatient, peer support, community support, and prevention. And we do drug and alcohol, have campuses in Jackson right behind Millsaps, 21 acres, and an 80-acre campus on the Gulf Coast. Hattiesburg, and then in Jackson. And so really, although it started 100 years ago, we haven't left, there's not really been mission creep. It's still about helping kids thrive and families overcome extraordinary challenges. And so we're not raising kids. We're equipping families so that they can raise their own kids. And so kids do not come and stay. Our longest length of stay sometimes is about 4.5 months. And then we get them back into their homes. And so that's in essence. I'm the chief operating officer, have the privilege of architecting and working with some very talented people from the program and operation side. I'm also over our IT, our quality management, so that it's not just important to say that we do these things, but we actually monitor it, and we're able to tell our story in a way that is compelling and is reflective from the voice of the kids and families that we are privileged to serve. So that is, in a nutshell, what we do.
Who knew that when we were coaching Little League together not long ago that this would occur? We have to take a break.
Sure.
4 minutes ago. Stephanie, what happens now? Terry, thank you very much.
Thank you. My privilege.